Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to today's episode of Afternoon Satsang, where we will continue with our conversations with Sai, conversations with Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba, as recorded by Dr. John Hislop. We are, I think, about midway or a little more through the book, and many exciting conversations, interesting conversations, understandable conversations, not so understandable conversations, but this is an attempt at satsang, an attempt to immerse ourselves in those thoughts which form a part of a dialogue between man and God. It is like a modern version of the Bhagavad Gita, because we have a seeker who is as eager and, if we can say, confused a bit as well, like Arjuna. And we have Krishna, our Bhagwan, on the other side answering all the questions. So, before we go ahead with today's conversations, we offer our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. And let's welcome Brother Prem to briefly summarize last time's session before we begin with today's discussion. Sairam Prem.
Sairam Arvind, and sairam to all our listeners. And yes, as Arvind just said, there are a lot of conversations, interactions which are happening here, which is very enlightening. But at the same time, there are interactions and exchanges which probably we do not understand at this moment. It is not very obvious from probably the knowledge that we have right now. But some of the things, of course, because Swami has said in other places in his discourses too, I think we can gather at least where the discussion is coming from. I think some of the conversations that we're going to go through today are something like that, which we don't really completely understand. But nevertheless, last week we were going through that part of the conversation where this discussion between what Swami means by heart and Swami and what we generally mean by heart when we talk about, I think that was being talked, that concept was introduced. And I think this again is a confusion that a lot of people have when they say that I'm following my heart, or this is what my heart says, so you should not follow your head, you should follow your heart. Swami makes it very clear even in this conversation where he said that when people talk about heart, because Hislop specifically asks about, is it the heart that women refer to? I think he asks that more to suggest that, is that something that we emotionally refer to when we say that this is what my heart is pointing to? Mm. And Swami says, no, that is not the heart I'm talking about. I'm talking, what they talk about is the subconscious mind, which is mixed with the tendencies and emotions and all of that. What Swami is talking about is consciousness. And Swami would often say this, recently I think somebody was asking about that, and I was looking for that reference in Swami's discourse where Swami says you have consciousness, conscience, and conscious. And Swami was saying that consciousness is the reflection of, the conscience is the reflection of consciousness. So one part of that consciousness which is inside us is the conscience. And Swami would say, whenever I'm speaking about the heart, I'm only referring to the conscience and not the emotions which come up. And because that's always the confusion, I think that's the part where we stopped last time.
You know, Swami gives the example of a balloon that is filled with air. If we consider that there is air inside the balloon, there is air outside the balloon. Though it looks like it is separate, the separation is only because of the rubber balloon. Once the balloon is popped, it's just air. So also Swami would say that the air outside the balloon is consciousness, or God as we refer to. The air inside the balloon is the conscience, which is also the presence of God within. So Swami would say that there is God everywhere and God within us also, and God is present in us as the conscience, and that conscience is what the heart is about. When you say listen to the heart, it's not about being emotional. So therefore Swami would often use these three words, consciousness, conscience, and conscious. One has to be conscious about it. And Swami would say, and that conscious is not now and then or here and there. It has to be a kind of constant integrated awareness. Only then will you be able to see the unity of the two, the air inside the balloon and the air outside the balloon. And now if this analogy and this explanation seemed like a bit over the head, welcome now to the next question from Hislop, where Hislop now says, just under my skin, about an inch, there seems to be a mirror. When I see Baba outside, I also see him in that mirror. The mirror reflects Baba's every move. Of these two, the Baba I see with my two eyes and the Baba of the inside reflection, which is the most real? And honestly confessing, Prem, very, very difficult to understand what he's referring to, because he's not just saying that when I see Swami outside, I feel a reflection within. He's even giving the precise depth. He's saying 2 inches below my skin, I feel like a mirror. Going to Swami's answer to that, Swami says, consciousness is a reflection. If pure, it is a clear reflection. It is by the sankalpa of Baba that the reflection is seen. Then Hislop asks, is it to the inside Baba that prayers and devotion should be addressed? And Swami says, when Baba is found within, he will be seen everywhere outside. And then Hislop says, when one inquires within, I is found to be I. That I is thought to be oneself. But then, it seems to me that I is not me at all, but it is Baba. And Swami says, that is correct. I is Baba, have no doubt. You and Baba are one. Not the tendencies and so on, but the essential you and Baba are one and the same. I is Baba.
Right. A lot of things which Swami speaks about in other places, and some of the things which probably is not very clear. For example, his reference to something like a mirror within. One thing which Swami would often say is, probably what place he's referring to, I don't know whether he mentions this in the conversations or in his book, My Baba and I, where he says about that first experience or one of the first few experiences that he has when he's sitting in Swami's presence.
In the interview room.
I don't know where exactly, where he suddenly feels this overwhelming feeling of warmth
love.
In his heart and in his love. And he says that, I'm sitting in front of Swami and I've never felt this anywhere. This experience is so unique. Swami would often say that, that the seat of God within the body, if you could ever point out to one place and say that that's where God resides, Swami would say it is the heart. Right? And Swami would say it's not the physical heart, but it is the spiritual heart, which is right in the center, more towards the right side, Swami would say. And I think there's one very beautiful and famous quotation by Ramana Maharshi, where he says, that Hridaya Kuhara Madhye Kevalam Jnana Murtim. There's one very famous shloka where he says, in the cave of the heart, there is a light. And that light keeps on saying, Aham, 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 Iti Sakshat. It says, and he says that feeling or that feeling I am, that is God. And that I am attaches itself to the body, the relationships, the experiences that this body has, and then gets complicated into this feeling that I am so and so. But that pure I am is what divinity is. And I think in that sense he's saying that Swami, I feel that this I is nothing but the Swami outside. And Swami says it's absolutely correct. The idea of seeing Swami as a mirror, I don't know whether Swami is referring to the heart as a mirror, but Swami would often refer to that, again, a very famous shloka by Dakshinamurti, where he says that, the mind is like a mirror and everything that you see is actually reflected off this mirror. You don't see anything directly. You're always seeing things only as a reflection of the world on this mirror called the mind. And this beautiful analogy which many people give is, it's like, when you're driving in a car and you're seeing the city which you have left on the drive on the rear view mirror. Right? And typically that's what the shloka goes. He says, Darpanam Drishyamana Nagari. This entire world is like a city that I'm seeing on a mirror. I'm not seeing it directly. And that's where all the analogy of Vedanta of how to purify the mind comes. I think we had a extensive session on that, analogy of the mind as a mirror, where it is like when there is dust on the mirror, when there is
a cloth covering the mirror. Or the mirror shakes.
Right. So we keep thinking that it's the flaw in the world, but it is the mirror that we are seeing the world reflected on, which is having all of these flaws. So in that sense, he's saying that I'm seeing Swami, but I'm seeing that the same Swami is probably, I'm sure of whether this is what he's referring to, but probably this might be what he's referring to, because you are seeing Swami and you're seeing that same Swami within also, where Swami is saying that, you know, if that also is a blessing of Swami, that you're able to see that the Swami outside is the same as the Swami within. And this idea of Swami saying that if you truly see Swami within, you'll start seeing Swami everywhere. Swami would often say that that's what is referred to as Ananya Bhakti. Swami would say that you get so lost in God that you start seeing Him within. And the moment you start seeing Him within, you cannot but see Him in every aspect of creation.
See, I think that's a very important point, because very often we try to see Swami in everyone. You know, see God in everyone, see the divinity in everyone. And Swami says here, how it is that we should be seeing God in everyone. And Swami says, when Baba is found within, He will be seen everywhere outside. So I think it is like we are making the mistake of putting the cart before the horse. We are making efforts to try to see Swami in people we love, and we feel that, yeah, that is possibly easy, but to see Swami in people we don't like or people who trouble us, it is so difficult. How do we see? That is like putting the cart before the horse, because Swami says it all begins with being able to see Swami within yourself. If we don't see Swami within ourselves, it is impossible to see Swami elsewhere. And Swami says the moment you are able to see and feel Swami within you, you will automatically feel Him everywhere else also. Once again, it comes down to the analogy of the mirror that you said. Similar it is, because in the analogy of the mirror, anything that we are seeing is because of the mirror. It's not because of the world or the city. So also here, to be it's like if I have to see Swami everywhere, that Swami should be there within me first. I should be able to feel Him within me. And when I say I feel Swami within me, it cannot be that, you know, it doesn't make sense that I'll come and tell, you know, I actually believe Swami is within me. Yeah, Swami is only within me, but you know, whole world is terrible. Everything is going to dogs. Everything is bad. No. When I say Swami is within me, it must reflect in my attitude, in my nature, in my smiles, in my joy. It must reflect in the positivity, the enthusiasm, the optimism, the joy, the attitude that Swami had. That is how it is, you know. And I feel the best way, a simple way, indicator would be if somebody else, you know, happens to interact with you and at the end of it, they go away feeling that, hey, we just felt Swami here. We felt Swami here. I think that would be an indicator that you have been in sync with Swami. Why others? We ourselves, you know, when we are in Swami's presence, what we feel, if we are able to feel that, then we know that we are able to feel Swami within. I just gave it as an easier indicator that somebody else tells, you know, somebody else listen to you speaking or, you know, is in your presence and then feel that, hey, it feels something nice over here. We could feel Swami's love. We felt touched. In fact, that is what Swami had told Dr. Deepak Anand. I don't know if I have mentioned this earlier. Swami asked him, how do you know that your speech is a success? He told Swami, if Swami is happy, my speech is a success. And Swami said, that you are saying now because I am here. What if Swami is not present physically? Then how will you know Swami is happy? And Deepak Anand didn't have an answer. And Swami said, even if one person from the audience comes and tells you, either verbally or through tears in their eyes, saying that, you know, we felt Swami today, you can know for sure that your speech is a success and Swami is happy with it. So, I think a similar kind of examination we can do to ourselves. If we are truly able to live with the presence of Swami within us, that presence will not go unnoticed by others, will not go unnoticed by us. We ourselves will be able to experience the serenity, the peace, the joy, the enthusiasm, the positivity that Swami experienced every moment of His physical sojourn. So I think we have to start going towards that. And it all begins with the conviction and faith that Swami is within. And therefore, we need to do all the sadhana or efforts that are necessary to ensure our faith and conviction in the truth that Swami is within. And this can vary for different people. For instance, yesterday, I suddenly remembered one Telugu song of Swami. And I searched it in our database, found that song and played it. For some reason, I got some association with that song. And as I was listening to it on the system, I got of tears in my eyes. It felt so beautiful. So that is my way. Different people may have different ways. A seva or a bhajan or whatever. But use all these sadhanas, these means, all these sadhanas as means to connect to the Swami within, to feel Swami within. Because once we succeed in feeling Swami within us every moment of our life, as Swami has promised here, when Baba is found within, he will be seen everywhere outside. So that is what I perceived from this entire conversation, that the first step towards seeing Swami in everyone is to start by seeing Swami in ourselves.
And I think pretty close to what we were just discussing is that one statement that Swami is making here. Mm. He's saying consciousness is a reflection. If pure, it is a clear reflection. Right? Swami is not referring to consciousness being pure because it is understood.
Correct.
That it's perfect. So it is the Sankalpa of Baba that the reflection is seen. So one way of looking at it is, going back to that idea of the mind being the mirror and what is within is what is reflected. They say it is both ways, and again, this is a repetition of what we've discussed in that satsang. You look at the world through the mirror of the mind, and people look at you through your mirror, right? So if I'm looking at you, I'm actually not looking at you, because if I was really looking at you, I'll be looking at the divine
Divinity,
self.
Yes.
Because that's who you really are, who I really am. But I am looking at the mirror. So how good a mirror is your mind is what matters to whoever interacts with you.
That's why Swami would say, right. The one the others think you are, right. The mind.
Is the mind. It is not the body. It is the mind, because, and the more this mind is purified, as Swami is saying it, if the mind is purer, the reflection of the consciousness is going to be clearer. The more pure our mind is, as you were saying, when people interact with us, they will say that, I feel closer to Swami when I'm interacting with you, or I can feel Swami's presence when you're interacting with you. And the other thing, of course, is, as Swami is saying here, it is by Swami's blessings that you're able to see Swami in that mirror. It is another way of saying that, the fact that Swami came in a physical presence in front of us, we were able to see God on this mirror, which otherwise cannot be seen unless you turn within.
Hmm.
Because the only way you can see God as a reflection on this mirror of the mind is if you turn within. But it is by Swami's grace that he comes in a human form, that even though we are looking out, we are actually looking at, we are having this opportunity of having divinity reflect off this consciousness. And I think that eventually will lead us to turn within. And I think probably that's what Swami is referring to here.
And then his love continues. Some say it is necessary to mortify the body to overcome the tendencies. And Swami replies, some spiritual aspirants do tapas and various austerities that torture and weaken the body. This is wrong. If there is a healthy body, that is the basis for healthy thoughts. Time and again, Swami says that the body is like a boat that has been gifted to us to go across this bhavasagara or this ocean of earthly, worldly existence. So, should you, spend too much time and energy and get obsessed with the boat? No. But that doesn't mean you should injure the boat and not take proper care of it. If there's a hole that comes in the boat, you are not going to succeed in your journey. You will sink midway. You will be drowned in the bhavasagara. And practically also, if you look at it, if my body is not healthy, I have seen, whether it's attending a bhajan or sitting for meditation or doing, not that I meditate much, but doing anything that we think as spiritual, like namasmarana, all of it becomes very difficult when we are sick. I have seen that when I'm having fever, I find it very difficult to do namasmarana. I don't feel like doing anything. I just feel like lying down and getting rid of the fever. So if the body is not fine, I'm not able to do those things that will help me go across this bhavasagara. Therefore, take care of the body such a way that you need not think about the body. When it is said that you should not think about the body, don't obsess on the body, focus on God. It also means that take care of the body sufficiently so that you need not think about the body. Otherwise, it's going to draw all your attention to yourself. If you are trying to meditate and you have a sprained ankle, if you don't go and get some immediate treatment done and put some cast, as you sit for meditation, all the while your thought will be on that ankle, which will be throbbing. And especially when you sit to meditate, it will seem to throb even more, it will pain even more. And therefore, in order to succeed in meditation, it's better that you have medication. Use medication for meditation. In the same way, Swami would also say that fasting, once in a while on a Shivratri night or here and there as a maintenance when you do, as a body reset kind of, so that your stomach gets some breathing space. That is fine. But regular fasting, doing it as a punishment, you know, I did this wrong. Today, I became a victim to anger, or I allowed lust to overcome me, or I allowed greed to overcome me, and therefore I, as a repentance, I will not eat food. Swami would never encourage that. He would often say, for a mistake of the mind, why are you punishing the body? Why are you flogging the body for somebody else's mistake? So don't do that. So, there are times, even in discourses, Swami say on this night fasting is done, but that is more like a maintenance activity. Maybe, you know, I don't know, maybe once in a year or once in a month, now and then, just like a maintenance activity, not as a punishment. Otherwise, as Swami says here, torturing and weakening the body is wrong. It is like a sin that you are committing, because this body is a boat that will help you go across this ocean.
There are both of these things that that Swami says, and I think, of course, as always, the virtue lies in the middle path or that balance. Because there's this very beautiful conversation which one of our lecturers was once narrating.
Mm-hmm.
He was in an interview with Swami. I think Swami was giving them a class interview. And as always, there were about 40 students, and Swami was speaking to all of them. There was this one particular boy who was extremely restless. He could not sit still for even a moment. And Swami was noticing it, and everybody else noticed that Swami was seeing him, and they were all giggling and all of that. And then a point came and Swami said, sit still, don't, you know, be so jittery. And that boy kept quiet for a few minutes, and just about 5 minutes later, again he started moving around, and he started, you know, unfolding
fidgeting.
His legs and folding it again. Something, you know, fidgeting all the time. So Swami looked at him, and everybody smiled, and you know, that moment passed. And then it came to a point where Swami said, if any of you have any questions, you can ask. And this boy put up his hand, and Swami said, what do you want? So he said, Swami, how to control the mind? Mm-hmm. Right? And Swami made a face, and again everybody burst into laughter, because it was so paradoxical that this boy was so fidgety was asking this question. The analogy that Swami gave was so very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Swami said, see, you have a pot of water, and you keep that pot of water on a table. How do you ensure that the water in this pot is stable? So he said, the first thing is you should not shake the table.
Hmm.
If you shake the table, even the water in the pot will shake. So Swami said, the water in the pot is like the mind. If your body is not stable, it will affect the mind also.
Hmm.
Right? So the first discipline is you have to discipline the body. You have to discipline the body, because there is a connection between the body and the mind. Right? And there's another 91 or 90 Samukos discourse where Swami very beautifully says how to control the mind and the senses. And some of the points which Swami gives is so practical, and, you know, we probably might not, in our neo-spiritual ideas, we might think that it's got nothing to do with spirituality. Swami is saying that stilling the body is very, very important. Swami says, when you're sleeping, are you sleeping straight? Without curling around and without twisting and turning. Swami is saying, when you speak to a person, are you able to look at that person and speak? Not look down or look around or being distracted.
Mm.
So some of these simple things, Swami says, when you start doing these, automatically the mind also becomes stable. So Swami was saying that there is a connection between the mind and the body, and disciplining the body is important. But when you start, as you said, punishing the body for the mistakes of the mind, or think that, you know, if I do something to the body, it is like me saying to the mind that, you know, you should be like this. Swami says you're actually reiterating body consciousness. You're kind of stamping your authority over the body and saying, this is my body, I can do whatever I want to do with it. On the other hand, if you strike that balance and say, and then I have to take care of this body because this is a boat which takes me there, or as Swami would say, you know, this is like a safe in which there is jewels, so you have to take care of the safe to take care of the jewels. In that case, Swami says you look at the body as something which has been loaned to you, and you have to take care of it till its purpose is served. So that balance between the importance that you give to the body and the disciplining of the body, and not overdoing it, because by doing that you're actually emphasizing your body consciousness. So Swami was saying that, you know, it's very important to maintain that balance.
In fact, not getting hooked to the body consciousness is actually the theme of the discussion that comes ahead. Hislop says, one's tendencies are there for a long time. Despite oneself, they come up again and again. And Swami says, there is the sun, the magnifying glass, and the paper. God is the sun, far away. The heart is the glass, magnifying glass. The desire and tendencies are the paper. If the glass is just right, the paper is burnt at once. If the heart has strong love for God and faith in Him, the glass is automatically right. So, when Hislop speaks of tendencies that are there from a long time, possibly because of actions done in this birth, or maybe even of the previous birth, Swami says all those tendencies can be burnt, provided you have a heart that focuses. It's not an ordinary glass, it's a magnifying glass. And I think, I don't know in the modern days, but when we were in school, third grade, second grade, it was such a fascinating thing. All of us would buy for 2 rupees, 3 rupees that magnifying glass from any bookstore, and we would love to burn bus tickets, paper, anything, you know. Focus the sunbeam into one narrow white dot which will just make a paper catch fire. I don't see many kids doing that nowadays because of the electronic invasion possibly. But this analogy is so relatable for us, at least from 2 decades ago, where Swami says that the same sunlight which is just warming can be used to burn away a paper if you just are able to focus it. So Swami says that sun is like God. If you use your heart to focus only on God, you can, the glass can be used to see anything. But if it is used exclusively or at least to a major part for focusing on God, Swami says even the tendencies will be burnt away. Because Hislop says that it's not as if I am doing something now, but there are tendencies that have accumulated, vasanas. What do I do about those vasanas? For that, Swami says, all that you need to do is focus your heart on God. By themselves, they'll get burnt.
You know, there is this analogy which one of our teachers used to give, especially when, you know, Swami comes and speaks to a student, or we would find that Swami would extensively speak to one student over many days and give him a lot of attention. So he would say that, you know, as a person who's sitting there in Mandir and observing this over and over again, so he was wondering, what is the difference? You know, what is Swami achieving by doing that? I mean, there's no way we will be able to completely answer that with accuracy, but he was saying that, see, this is, Swami is that supreme consciousness. And when he comes and speaks to an individual, or when he comes and speaks to a group of individuals, it is like that supreme consciousness focusing on this one particular point or one particular individual. So it is like the opportunity that is given where every small effort that you take gets magnified and the results you get is so immense. Right? And if you really look at it, you know, it's similar to what Swami is telling you, the magnifying glass experience. Of course, it does not matter whether Swami comes and speaks to that individual or not. As Swami would say, God's grace is like sun. It's always shining on everyone equally. It is whether you have focused your heart, you've turned your heart into that magnifying glass, which is, you know, aligned in that right angle and getting that grace. And I mean, this is actually Swami's assurance, if I could put it that way, where Swami is saying that if you do this, the tendencies get burnt, because, you know, its tendencies are supposed to be the culprit in spirituality, because they are so deep inside the mind, they cannot be so easily uprooted. But Swami is saying that through devotion, through that focused love, they can be burnt and burnt for good.
You know, it reminds me of multiple incidents. One is, of course, a thing that we have repeated many times. A video of the same is also available as one of the hosted videos on the Radio Sai channel, where Professor Gangadhar Shastri speaks of how, you know, he was stuck with this addiction to smoking and just could not give it up, even though he became a teacher in Swami's college. And how in one instant, Swami just said, you will give up, you give it up, and blessed him. And that was the last he ever smoked. So it is possible, you know, in a matter of moments, it is possible to burn off all these accumulated tendencies of this birth as well as the previous birth. One more incident that I remember is what is recorded by Professor Kasturi in his book, Loving God. He says that he was also addicted to snuff. Snuff, I think, is a predominantly Indian kind of habit where you take tobacco powder or tobacco paste and stuff it inside your nose. You know, some kind of a kick you get out of it. It is supposed to be a less harmful substitute to smoking because your lungs don't get damaged, but it's equally damaging to your body, and more so it damages your handkerchief and cloth that you keep. You know, it gets very, very dirty. So Kasturi Garu had this habit, he says, and he gave up this habit when he traveled with Bhagwan to Rishikesh. So in Rishikesh, he says, they were staying at Swami Shivananda Ashram and they were all given rooms. And Professor Kasturi and five others were allotted one room, one place, a dormitory kind. One night, Swami suddenly makes a surprise appearance to their dormitory. They are not expecting. They are about to just go to bed and Swami suddenly comes, walks straight to Kasturi's bed and picks up the pillow and points out to that box of snuff. And Swami says, "Chief, what is this? Dirty, dirty, you know." And we know when Swami says dirty, how it's not as if Professor Kasturi has spoken about this or I have the visual, but having seen Swami say dirty, bad boy. You know, Swami will tell the word bad boy itself with so much of power that you feel like the most terrible chastising you have received. Like that you feel. So Swami told dirty, this is very dirty. And Kasturi says, "I was filled with so much remorse at that point. I immediately fell at Swami's feet and said, 'Swami, I will throw it off this moment. I don't want it anymore.' Instantly, Swami's face blossoms into a broad smile and lovingly Swami pats him on his back and congratulatory pat on his back. Swami says, 'Yes, very good, very happy.' And Swami walks out. And very funnily, Kasturi writes in his own inimitable style that as he was about to throw it, you know, throw it out, he takes it and goes out and wants to throw it. He says, two sannyasis come to him and say, 'No, no, please don't. We have to import this from as far as Delhi.' He says they ask for Jnana Churnam. Jnana Churnam means that powder which confers Jnana or knowledge. So they say, 'Please don't throw away Jnana Churnam, give it to us.' And Kasturi says, 'Okay,' and he gladly gives it to them and comes back. He also adds his thought that it is very strange that something that a Grahastha was giving up, a sannyasi was desperately longing for. And he feels that it is all Swami's blessing that a Grahastha is able to give up that which even a sannyasi is struggling to give up. And he shares that incident so beautifully. That incident also shows that, you know, with God's grace, it's just a matter of moments. Because whether it is smoking or whether it is snuff, which is also tobacco in powder form, these are not easy to give up because biochemically also the body gets dependent on them. Multiple reasons why they are tough to give up. But there are many examples of Swami's devotees who with Swami's love have been able to kick it off that instant. And Kasturi writes that that was the last ever he touched a snuff or a snuff box. After that, that habit was kicked away forever. So definitely it's not just that. It is theory that if you focus God's grace, you are able to burn away. There are many, many examples and incidents, and these were two. On that note, dear listeners, we'll take a quick little break. On the other side of the break, we'll continue with this dialogue.
निरपार निर्वैर अकाल मूर्त अर्जुनी से भंग गुरु प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक हो सी भी सच गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु गोविंद गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु भगवन
Welcome back, dear listeners. We'll continue with the conversation that we dropped off before that beautiful song on the Guru. Hislop continues to ask, you know, before this he had just asked about the tendencies which are there for a long time, and Swami says that by focusing God's grace, you'll be able to burn off these tendencies. Hislop comes to one particular tendency. He says, one very strong tendency is in the tongue, the problem of taste, which gives rise to craving for more. How to overcome that? And Swami says, the body is like a boil. Water is for cleansing the wound. Food is the medicine. Clothing is the bandage. So beautiful, right? Swami says that the body is like a boil, like an injury. The water that the body needs is for cleaning the wound. The food is the medicine. And the clothing that we wear is the bandage. Continuing, Swami says, considering the body so, reduces the strength of taste. But what is taken in by seeing, hearing, talking is the more important food. Gross food for the body is like digging a well. Whereas pure subtle impressions taken in by the other senses is like building a wall high unto the heavens. It is building the wall high that should have a major emphasis. You know, Prem, reading this, what I understood was that Swami is emphasizing the fact that while the food that we take in is important, the food, the gross food that we take in through the mouth, the subtle food is also there, which comes to us through our senses. The sights we see, the sounds we hear, the smells we take in, the things we feel, all these are subtle food that are far more important. And Swami is saying that the gross food is like digging a well, whereas all the subtle food is like the protective wall that is built around the well. My understanding was that when you dig a well, you get pure water. That pure water is anyway there. So wherever you dig a well, the water that is there underground is always pure, because it is filtered through multiple layers of soil, and you know, scientifically we look at it, that's how it is. It is pure water. Groundwater is pure. But what contaminates groundwater is, once the well is made, if the surrounding wall around the well is not made, then surface water, so much of it flows into the well and contaminates the water that's in the well as well. You know, if it gets contaminated, it can lead to an epidemic in the village as well. Therefore, while digging the well is important to get the water, having got that water, more important is to build the wall around. And Swami says, when Swami says here, build the wall as high as the heavens, I feel, my understanding was that you must be so careful about what you receive from the other senses, so that the purity that's already within, there is divinity already within each one of us. Everyone is born as a baby. That's why they say the babies are closest to God. Everyone is divine. And to discover that divinity, this human life is given to sustain, which we need food. That is like digging and getting the water in the well. But it should not get contaminated. That's why the food that is taken in through the senses have to be kept pure. You know, what we take in, what we see. That's why Swami would say, see no evil, see what is good. Hear no evil, hear what is good. Talk no evil, talk what is good, you know. Therefore, that is more important than the gross food we eat. But in order to control that tendency for, you know, becoming a slave to the tongue for the taste, Swami says it will help if we inculcate the conviction that body is an injury, a wound, is a boil. The food is just a medicine. You know, when the doctor tells me, take paracetamol, I won't tell, doctor, can you give me a strawberry flavored paracetamol or some other grape flavored paracetamol? In fact, my daughter tells that. And only kids do that. And that is understandable. But if I were to do that, the doctor would think that I am a fool. Because a medicine is medicine. It's not, I'm not taking the medicine for the taste. I'm taking it for what it does. That's why Swami says, consider food as a medicine. You don't live to eat. You should eat so that you can live. Consider the dress you wear as a bandage. You know, when you wear a bandage, again, it's only kids who will say, give me a pink bandage or give me a yellow bandage. I like a multicolor bandage. But for me, I want the bandage to serve its purpose, which is protect the injury, protect the boil. So too, Swami says, if you are able to think in this manner, your dressing, your eating, your drinking, all will get tempered and modified accordingly, because you will realize that the water is only for cleaning, food is just medicine, and clothing is nothing but the bandage or dressing that you give for the boil, which is the human body.
In fact, this one idea that food is medicine, I think Swami has spoken extensively about that in some of his discourse. He says if you have this one attitude that food is medicine, then the way you will consume it, the way you will look at it, will be completely different. Right now, we look at food as, as a source of pleasure, as a source of entertainment, literally in that sense. And that is why it completely changes. In fact, I was seeing a documentary. Of course, it's completely different from what we are talking about. In that, he studies many civilizations and he kind of tracks them, why civilizations failed. Some of the best civilizations that we've had in the past. The Roman and, some of the great empires like that. So he says that, the pleasure seeking in the society goes to such an extent that beyond a point, it becomes unsustainable and it becomes criminal on the lower sections of society. And he says one of the best examples for that is the Roman civilization, where you had a good section of people start indulging so much on it without bothering about what, the lower half of the society is suffering. That, of course, is the economic disparity. But he was saying that in most of these cultures, you would find the emphasis on food goes up. So much so that you would have the role that we call today as a chef, right? And every culture had its own terminology for that. They start becoming the most paid in that particular society. So they say that that is a very, very dangerous sign. And they've seen any society which has gone to that level. And that is because you have started giving more important to more importance to food, the way it is presented, the way it is, you know, the variety which goes into it. And you, as Swami is saying here, you don't look at it anymore as medicine, which has a certain utility, but you look at it as a means of luxury.
You know, if you look at food as medicine, so many things automatically come in. For instance, you simply don't pop in pills. There's a dosage. You don't exceed the dosage. It is taken in a timely manner. If the doctor tells, take one pill, once in the morning, once in the noon, once at night, that's what we'll do. If we consider food also like that, it's medicine that has to be taken once in the morning, once in the afternoon, once at night, in this particular dosage. It's not like, hey, let me take three pills today in the lunch. It brings in so much discipline because, you know, with medicines, I don't do that. I won't say, you know what I'll do? Today, the lunch is very good. Let me overeat. I'll skip dinner. You don't do that with medicine. It's not that, let me take pop in three pills now and skip the next one.
Right.
That discipline comes in when we consider food as medicine. When you were speaking about the Roman civilization, I think the time Julius Caesar comes is to rule. He becomes the emperor. That's mm-hmm. one of the peak times of the Roman civilization. And there's a famous comic series called Asterix the Gaul.
Right.
You know, which is all about the Roman Empire and one village that fights back against the Roman Empire. Though it is a animated series and it's a comic, many details have been kept true to the conditions that existed then. Mm-hmm. And it is through that, you know, you get to know of these Roman orgies. In the orgies, what they would do is they would indulge in eating and eating and eating and eating and drinking and drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And it is said that when you feel full, you go to the lavish lavatories that are there by the side and puke.
Mm-hmm.
You throw up. Why do you throw up? So that you can again come back to the orgy and continue eating. So to that extent it had gone, you know, the deriving pleasure from eating. So much so that even if your stomach is full, you still want to derive that pleasure. So you go and vomit out so that you can come back and eat again. So that much, if it gets very interesting, that is also one of the leading factors that is one of the leading indicators to show indicators, that a decline is going to happen. And Swami says here that is what you should do.
And this generally, I think Swami would often use the terminology ahara and vihara. I think one of the thought for the days which we had recently is also Swami mentions that these are four things. You know, if you want to protect your spiritual progress, and Swami would often say that your spiritual progress is like, you know, you have to protect, you have to seek the next level and you have to sustain what you've already got. You know, it's almost like mountain climbing. You're all the time trying to raise higher, but at the same time, you should ensure you don't slip further down also.
Mm.
And that's what is often referred to as yoga kshema. Mm. Yoga is what you're reaching out to and kshema is what you've already got, you sustain it.
Mm.
And so Swami would say for that, ahara and vihara is very important.
When you say this, I'm sorry for interrupting. I remember Dr. Narasimhan, who is currently the director of the General Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I remember all five or six. Swami told him.
Okay.
That along with giving medicine to all the, because he is also in charge of the mobile hospital, he mm-hmm. actually came in as the in charge for the mobile hospital. He said medicine is one aspect. It's only the final part.
Okay.
More important than medicine is to teach them preventive healthcare. I mean, to prevent these things from, curative is one aspect. That's the final aspect. Preventive is more important. And Swami said along with preventive, you have to teach them. And Swami gave beautifully, ahara, vihara is definitely there.
Mm-hmm.
Swami said, achara, vichara, ahara, vihara, and two others. I'm not remembering all of them. But ahara, vihara was there at the very core. So even when it came to the healthcare program and healthcare outreach, Swami has emphasized on ahara and vihara. That's why I remember, I think it was in 2008 or 2009, when this mobile hospital was two years old or just 3 years old, it was functioning. Dr. Narasimhan came to us at Radio Sai Studios and he wanted a few documentaries made. See, that 2000, about more than 12 years back, YouTube was not so popular and we didn't have videos coming out at such breakneck speed. So he took our assistance and we made specific videos on nutrition, food, what to eat, what not to eat, how to cook food, all these, you know. When we were actually making it, we felt, what is this? How does, you know, how does all this come into healthcare? But there is, you know, all of it is holistic healthcare. It, when Swami would say, jaise ann, vaise tan, vaise man. As is the food, so is the body, so is the mind. It's all related. And when you said that ahara vihara, it triggered off these. Because he said, Swami said, you have to emphasize not only on medicine, not only on prevention of all these problems, but on their achara, which is their conduct.
Right.
Their vichara, which is their thoughts. Their ahara, which is their food. Their vihara, which is their dwelling place. And one more, you know, rhyming word with this, Swami had given one or two more. So that is the importance of food.
Right. And Swami would say that, you know, both of these are important in that sense, where the other analogy which Swami would give is, you know, when Swami is saying food should be consumed like medicine, Swami would say every doctor will give you a medicine and will also give you a diet. Right. So Swami would say ahara vihara is like that. You know, the medicine that you take, at the same time, the discipline that you have to follow. You know, you'll be told that these are things that you should not have, and these are things that you're not supposed to have in the night, you can have in the morning, and all of those restrictions.
Aushadam and Patyam, Swami.
Right, Aushadam and Patyam are the two words which Swami would use. The medicine and the
dietary
discipline,
restriction.
Dietary restriction that needs to be followed. And, you know, Swami is here saying that the emphasis on what you take in through the senses is much, much more important. As Swami would say, I think, again, this we must have discussed when we spoke about food in one of the satsangs. Swami would say that, you know, when you consume food, most of the food that we consume is actually the gross part which kind of gets excreted out of the body. And it's only the subtle part which becomes the nutrients and nourishes the body. The subtlest part goes to the mind. But when you're talking about anything that the senses take in, especially you talk about what the sense is taken through the eyes and the ears, they do not have any gross part at all. So almost entirely they go into the mind. And when you look at it from that point of view, what goes in through the senses is actually much, much more dangerous and critical than what goes in through the food. You could probably, you know, like when you eat something bad and you get food poisoning, there are ways of flushing that out of the body. But to flush it out of the mind takes much, much more effort. And I think probably that's why Swami is saying that what is taken through the senses needs to be given more care than the food that is taken in.
There was this king who was bald, they say, and all the treatment that he tried never gave him any hair.
Okay.
So he said that I'll give out a prize to anybody who can get me hair, but one condition, if they fail in their endeavor, I will have them beheaded. So all the doctors were fearful to come ahead and try. But finally, when he was forced, this doctor comes forward and he tells the king that here is a special oil that will give you hair. But remember, when you're applying it to your head, you should not think of a mango. If you think of a mango, it will not work. Needless to say, the king was just not successful in applying the oil, because the moment he takes the oil, mind automatically thinks of the mango. You know, I was reminded of the story when you said that it is so difficult to flush things out of the mind, because Swami says, forget this birth. Mind carries impressions from several births. In fact, Swami would say that when you die, you leave behind everything. What you take ahead, only the mind that accompanies you in your journey to your next birth. And that is why they say these are vasanas, these are traits, tendencies that you carry across from births. And therefore, when you realize that this subtle food, you know, though theoretically I know this, just reiterating this here in the satsang and listening it makes me feel more fearful and want me to be more vigilant in terms of what the senses take in. Because, as you said, it goes directly, affects the mind, and this can affect not just this birth, but births and several lifetimes. And to burn it, we know what we need. You know, you need to focus and get God's grace and make effort to burn it. So difficult. You know, it's almost like middle-aged fat. Very easy to accumulate, very, very tough to burn. And therefore, it's better that we have prevention rather than cure.
And in reply to what Swami was saying, actually, Hisla Pass, Swami is saying body is a boil, but Swami often uses the phrase, the body is the temple of God. And he's in fact surprised by Swami's usage of the word that body is a boil, which is again going back into, you know, decrying the body. It's like you're saying that it is not very important. So Swami says in response, in the spiritual world, there is a different arithmetic. Three minus one is equal to one. There is you, the mirror, and the image. Remove the mirror and there is only one life, one left. Life is the mirror. Body is the reflection. Be attached to God and there is only one. That is God. The body is the temple of God. So Swami is saying that that is true. That is no doubt true that the body is a reflection of God. But in the physical sense, you know, when you're talking about spirituality as such, you're talking about reality, unreality, you're talking about, you know, what is really there and what is only a reflection, or what is an illusion, or what is a optical, you know, what it's playing up with your eyes. So Swami is saying, in that sense, the body is unreal, and the body just needs to be kept in balance so that it does not, you know, interfere with your pursuit of truth. But if you look at it as, you know, body as being a temple of God, that is a different approach to the same thing, where you look at, you know, you're seeking God and God is within and God is in that sense.
I think it is so simple to understand that it's all about the context. See, even if we take a real temple of God, it's the temple of God. But you can also say that it is a cement structure. It is a structure that is made up of cement, brick, rock, sand, mud. It is nothing but all this. That's also true. You can't say that you're calling it mud and sand and stone, but you're telling it's temple of God what it is. It is both. You know, when there, it's all about the context. You know, you look at a lion and or a tiger while describing it. You call it a cruel beast. You call the lion a cruel beast, but you also call the lion a magnificent beast. You know, depending on the context, you call a pig as dirty. You say it's a dirty pig. You see a movie, there's that movie called Babe, and you know, you say it's such a cute pig. So is a pig cute or dirty? Is a lion magnificent or cruel? It's all context and it's all how you view it. So I think in the same way, based on the context, the body is, yeah, because, you know, Swami would say that it's a temple of God. I don't know if Swami had composed this poem, that Malinuku Kampa, Dampa, Rampa. I don't know that Telugu one which says that the body is nothing but a bag of phlegm, all dirty fluids, it excrete fecal matter there in the body. That poem that Swami would say, if Hislop is getting shocked listening to Swami calling the body as a boil, what he would have thought when he heard this. But yes, it's about the context. In the physical sense, that's what it is. And I think Swami would give these in different contexts. One in the context that don't be vain, don't give too much importance to the body, don't get egoistic, don't think that your hands, you know, don't obsess over your body, because after all it's a bag of dirt. At the same time, Swami would say, realize the magnificence of this opportunity that you got the body, because the body is a boat that takes you across. It is both. But it is told in different way to people who require it in different manner. That's all I think.
In fact, I think just yesterday we were going through that story in some other context. We were looking for it. The story of Madalasa and she naming her child.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very beautiful story where, you know, it's quite different from what Swami says. Where, you know, she marries this prince, I think. I forgot the name of the prince. And then, you know, they beget a son, and the son is named by the king with a very royal name, which is befitting,
I think, some Vikrant,
right? Vikrant or something like that is named, and Madalasa laughs. And for those who don't know, Madalasa is supposed to be one of those mothers in ancient tradition who is looked upon as somebody who was very spiritual and who brought up children in a very spiritual manner. So I would always give her as an ideal example for that. So she starts laughing at this name which was given, and the king gets offended. But the next time another kid is born, and I think he names him Bahubali.
Bahubali, yes. Right? Yeah, some and, very strong.
Right. And then again, she laughs at the name. So the king says that next time when we get a child, you name the child.
For the fourth child. The third is also some Shatrujit, or one who destroys enemies.
Right.
Like that.
So finally the fourth child is supposed to be named by Madalasa, and she names the child Alarka.
Meaning mad dog.
Mad dog, right. And the king gets very infuriated and says that, how do you name a child like this? And, you know, after all, it's your own child. And then she says that, see, this body is actually unreal. And anyone who has not realized their true nature is nothing but a mad dog. And anyone who has reached that state, what is there in a name for that
name
person?
Name doesn't matter. Yes.
The name doesn't matter. And Swami narrates this as a Chinnakatha and says that, you know, such were the glorious mothers of the past. The same Swami also narrates the story of, you know, how people used to name their children after gods, Rama, Krishna, Govinda, so that at least that way they take God's name. And right. Swami would kind of speak of that as a virtuous practice. So as you're saying, the context is different, but the message is powerful in both instances.
And it is the same.
Right.
In both the messages, realize the reality.
Go beyond the body, right.
And interestingly, for those of our listeners who are interested, just found out that this story of Madalasa, it actually forms 30-35% of what is known as the Markandeya Purana. So okay. It is a part of that, and it comes there between cantos 20-36. It's all about the glorious Madalasa, whom Swami would... In fact, I also came across a few, just don't have it right away now, but Swami would sing out the lullabies that Madalasa would sing out to her children. And in these lullabies were embedded the greatest truths of life. And the story goes that finally all of Madalasa's children, they actually give up worldly life and take to an ascetic life and become God-realized souls. And that's why, you know, she is considered as the ideal mother as per Sanatana Dharma. Because, you know, I remember in this context again, I think it will also be in 2 days' time, we are coming to the date November 3rd. Mm-hmm. November 3rd in 1963 was the day when Swami's bodily father, Pedda Venkama Raju, passed away.
Okay.
And apparently when he passed away, a lot of devotees wrote condolence letters to Swami.
Mm-hmm.
Because interestingly, in the November 1963 issue of Sanatana Sarathi, those times, I think somewhere on the 20th of every month, the issue would be released. So the November 1963 issue of Sanatana Sarathi begins with Swami addressing the devotees. And in brief, what Swami says is that all of you wrote condolence letter to me. What are you condoling for? You know, why are you feeling sad? And Swami says, you all write that may that soul rest in peace. Don't you know that the nature of the soul is peace? The nature of the soul is bliss. Swami says that. And in that letter, Swami writes, I mean, it's like an open letter to all the devotees. In that Swami writes, people think that the purpose of life is you die to be born again, you were born to die. Swami says, no. The purpose of life is you are born so that you are never born again. You die so that you never die again. Swami says this is the only purpose in life. And this is the truth that Madalasa taught her children, because of which they gave up all worldly pursuits. And all four of them became God realized. And that's why even if you do an internet search, Madalasa in many places is mentioned as the mother of Hinduism. She is the epitome of ideal motherhood, because she fulfilled that, you know, objective. You know, Swami would tell many times in discourses that you have taken your birth in your mother's womb. The way you pay gratitude to your mother is ensure that you never enter any other womb again. Because that much pain, that much suffering, never. Meaning, you have to get realization in this lifetime. And the goal for a mother is to ensure that the child gets realized. But for that to happen, the mother herself has to be realized. And Madalasa ticked off all these boxes. No wonder that in multiple discourses, Swami speaks so highly of her.
Right. And then Swami continues with his answer to Hisla when he asked about this body being a temple of God. Swami says, The life of the person is the priest. The five senses are the vessels used in the religious ceremony. Atma is God, the idol of God. One cannot say that the body is the temple of God unless it is. Every act, thought and word should be worship in the temple. The five senses should constantly be cleansed and polished so that the worship is reverentially offered to God. One goes to the office and says to himself that every act of the day should be worship of God, and it will be so. So Swami is saying that yes, the temple, the body is a temple of God, but it can be considered a temple of God only when you look at the Atma within as God, and you're able to do every act as an act of worship, as an act of dedication to that divine within.
And then Hislop continues. He says, Swami says that when the senses leave their place and mix with worldly objects, pain and pleasure are produced. What is the proper place of the senses? And Swami says, it is all the play of desire. Desire for worldly objects produces pleasure and pain, whereas desire for God confers bliss and does not produce pain. I think this conversation, maybe we'll just read it out a bit, mm-hmm. because there's nothing much to discuss. Swami is making it so clear and simple. Hislop says, but Swami, most of our actions arise from worldly desires. We see, hear, think, feel, smell. Then there is some desire that leads to action. And then Swami says, God works through you as desire. Swami, does God prompt even the bad desire? There is a strong thrust of the life force, the desire to live. If it goes into action in a favorable field, it becomes love. Otherwise, it remains as desire. If desire is expressed in a favorable field, it is expressed as love. Then knowledge and bliss arise. The force, the strength, the energy, and the motivation in desire, that is God. Whether the desire is good or bad is related to the time, place, and person. In early years, a desire for worldly achievement might be good. In later years, the same desire might be bad. Fruit good one day may become rotten several days later. One side of the apple may become good, the other side rotten. Discrimination says, eat the good side and discard the bad. Now that is another force in you through which God works, and that is discrimination. That force must be used to put aside wrong action. The power of discrimination knows what is right and what is wrong. The wrong desire is God overshadowed by Maya, whereas discrimination is God less overshadowed by Maya. So Swami makes it very clear when Hislop asks, is bad desire also prompted by God? Swami says, no. The enthusiasm, the passion, the energy, the force, the strength, that motivation which comes behind every desire, that is God. The desire is left depending on where you are giving focus on. If you are focused on pleasure seeking and external senses, yes, the energy of God gets diverted there. Swami is saying, like, God is that energy, that is power, which is neutral. Where you direct it, it works there, it animates that. It's like Swami would give the example of the surgeon's knife, which can also be used to commit a murder. In the same way, an engine can be used to do good or bad. The engine is the power. Swami is saying God is the power that, you know, that pervades everything. But how you direct the power depends on your discrimination. And Swami says that discrimination is also another power of God. So therefore, you have to choose how you direct this power. Wherever you direct it, it will work there. With intense negativity also it will work. With intense positivity also it will work.
Right. Swami would again often give the example of electricity as such. Mm. Right. It is like, suppose I go and touch a live wire and get a shock. It doesn't mean the electricity has come after me and given me a shock. It is like the electricity is doing what it has to do. The same electricity, you connect a, you know, a bulb to it or a fan to it, it would express itself differently. And Swami would say that the God who expresses within you, whether you speak sweet words or whether you speak harsh words or whether you express a good desire, bad desire, if you do good actions or bad actions, it is the same divine sentience within which actually expresses in that particular act. But it is that ego which actually gives you a flavor or makes that choice. So that is what is the discrimination part, Swami would often say that.
You see, I'm reminded of all our scriptures, you know, all not scriptures, our Puranas and all this, where you have Hiranyakashipu or Ravana, all these demons who become extremely powerful. How do they become powerful? Because of boons they have got from God only. It is God's power only that is making them powerful and making them do all these evil things.
Right.
And how are they defeated? Hiranyakashipu is defeated by Prahlada. How? Again by God's power only. Prahlada is also God's power. Hiranyakashipu is also God's power. It's just that one did it with discrimination and did the right way, the other did the wrong way. It is the same power. So if you say that, why is it that God, you are making these people do bad? No, the energy is given all uniformly to all. It's like we spoke about the sunlight. It's there for all. How that sunlight is used depends on each. One can use it to focus. One can use it to dry clothes. One can use it to do any other things, you know. In the same way, God's power is the same. Again, it's like the power in the atom, the atomic power. You can either make an atom bomb with it, or you can make a nuclear power reactor which will provide light and life to thousands and millions of people. In the same way, Swami says, the power of God is available to you. How you direct it, how you divert it, how you use it, makes you either a Hiranyakashipu or a Prahlada.
And the same point which Swami is saying here, you know, it's about the desire which actually makes pleasure and pain. This again is something that we experience all the time. In the fact that, you know, somebody, who, let's say you go to a theme park, right? Somebody might find a ride very interesting and exciting. They, you know, it's the adrenaline rush. But for somebody else, it might be a terror. I mean, we've seen that. It's the same ride. It's not changing for anybody else. The same way somebody finds jumping into a pool very relaxing, but somebody might find that terrifying. And we have such examples within our studio itself, right? Very similar. We're brought up in the same way. We are, you know, of the same age. But the way we react to situations is different. It's because the way we are, the way we look at things, what we desire, what we want to keep away from, what is referred to as, you know, raga and dvesha. Some will say that is what makes something pleasurable and something painful. It is possible that predominant percentage of people find a particular object pleasurable and a particular object painful. But still, it only comes from the mind. It does not come from the object itself. And I think that is what Swami is saying here, where he's saying that there are some desires, and those desires leads to actions, and that leads to pleasure and pain. The objects themselves do not give or take away pleasure.
You know, going back to that Bhagavad Gita shloka where Krishna says that the ultimate cause of destruction of discrimination, because Swami is saying here discrimination is another power of God that you should use to properly divert the power of God within you. But this discrimination, if it is destroyed, it leads to your own destruction. And in that shloka, Krishna says that discrimination, destruction, starts with senses getting attached to external objects and external things. The senses start getting attached. And that is what Swami referred to as the more important food than the gross food we eat. Now we understand why Swami emphasized more on building that wall to ensure that the water in the well is safe. Because that is where all the contamination happens. That is where the impurities enter and lead us to use the power of God the way Ravana or Hiranyakashipu did, rather than the way the devotees of the Lord did. So I think that on that note, we will conclude today's satsang, because it's the time in our studio is almost 1:59. But I think we should take home this message that it is so important to do continuous, ceaseless efforts in growing in our love for Swami. It all boils down to growing in our love for Swami. Once we start loving Swami, once we feel that love, wake up in the morning, speak to Swami. Before lunch, speak to Swami. All these prayers that have been put in for us, you know, morning prayer, night prayer, lunch prayer, food prayer. I think these are all just indicators for us that this is a time to just think of Swami once. Because the more we think of Swami, the more love we feel for Him. Automatically, we'll be able to see Swami in everything in our life. Automatically, we'll make the right decisions. Automatically, life will get peaceful and joyous. So praying to Swami that we use our discrimination right and feel His love, feel love for Him growing in us every moment of our life. We'll bring this satsang to a close. We'll end with this song, on the other side of which, as always, you'll be greeted by Brother Chandu in his segment, Love to Love.
प्रभु जी तुम बिन कौन सहारा दे दो जगतो धारा पालनहारा जगतो धारा पालनहारा रक्षा करो साईं अवतारा रक्षा करो साईं अवतारा अब तो तुम ही हो आधारा दे दो भवसागर से हमको किनारा